they say content is king. It is. The tools change. We're going to speak maybe a little bit about XR and VR. So those, the new tools are coming in, but the tools will change. We'll have different ways to experience. Content has to be really good in order to hold up. That's what I think.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hello. I'd like to do a little foreshadowing, if you don't mind.
Oh, no.
I've decided to quit my job at Indiana Wesleyan and become a sculptor.
Why?
One of my friends did it, and he's already made six figures.
Oh, my. Thank you, Brad.
The relevance of that will become abundantly clear in a few minutes.
Oh, no. I love how you go ahead and break the ice for our guests so that they don't have to. Thank you. Typically, we are interviewing someone who is right in the middle of higher ed, but today we have a really neat opportunity to branch out and to hear from someone in industry about the creative ways that we as higher ed professionals can get on board and be more futuristic and upskill our students for the workforce. And wow. Mostly we just want an excuse to talk to our guest today because he is fascinating. So we're welcoming to the show Ofer Rubin. Ofer Rubin has spent the last two decades assembling and leading creative teams across multiple high growth companies with solutions ranging from augmented reality products for leading global online retailers, the development of real-time motion capture solutions, sensor-based arcade games, online 3D games, and more. He's held the titles of VP of Content, Head of 3D and Animation, Senior Art Director and Creative Manager in a number of technology startups, and founded the companies RealEye Z3D, a pioneer in 3D user experience for the online jewelry retail market, and Hands Up Animation, which completed a broad range of 3D animation projects in Israel and abroad. Ofer is a graduate from the Department of Industrial Design at the Bezalel Academy and a member of the VR-AR Association. We're so excited to share with you the fascinating story and narrative of Ofer Rubin. Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here, Tiffany and Brad. What an opening. It's going to only go from here from now.
Ofer, we like to start the show with some icebreakers. And as I mentioned, Brad's kind of already stolen the icebreaker show from you, but we're still going to go that route. First one, sometimes when we spend so many hours in digital worlds, it is nice to have other pursuits. We have it on good authority that you are also an artist in physical mediums. So if you could tell us a little bit about your work in sculpting, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, perfect. So actually, I graduated from industrial design a long time ago, back in 1998. And right after I graduated, I decided I don't want to be a product designer, but I want to go into 3D. So 3D was really interesting because, and again, it's really exciting right now, but it was also exciting back then because I could do anything I wanted. So I can create a character, design what it looks like, and then decide what it wears. So like a fashion designer, and then decide how it moves and directing cameras all in 3D. I can create the environment. So I was like an interior designer. So I could be like a little god that creating my own world, like everything. And I was always very creative, so I wanted to touch everything that I could in those worlds. So 3D really helped me touch that, and it was all virtual. So actually, although I studied industrial design with wood and doing stuff with materials, I wanted to go to the virtual world. So that's what I did until about 10 years ago when I got divorced. I think it was like a midlife crisis. So it was a big life change. And then I had more free time. And I said, you know what, let's go back to the basics. And when I was like 16, 18, I like to draw and do art, and let's go back to the basics. So I started to try out with actual materials. And then I started sculpting with metal mesh. So it's really interesting. Again, I sculpted mostly figures, male and female figures, because that's something that anatomically comes to me really easy. And I just played around with it. And then it's similar to 3D because instead of sculpting on a software, I sculpt with my hands. So instead of using a mouse, I use my hands, use the scissors, metal scissors. I had to wear gloves and long clothes because I got cut at the beginning. It's actual metal, very physical. So it's not easy. It's almost like a workout. And then people liked it. So I did some art shows. I sold in several galleries around the world. So I think that's really interesting. And when I thought about it before this podcast, I think the main thing that comes across my work is that I managed to combine creative and tech. So either creative and virtual or technical software, or creative and have tools to create that creative. So whether it's the mouse and 3D software, or it's scissors and other tools to work with the mesh. So that's really interesting.
I think it's incredible you can bounce back and forth like that between the virtual world and the handheld materials.
Yeah.
We've also been informed that you also may be part fish. So are you competitive in your swimming, or is it more casual? Oh,
okay, so this is interesting. And you guys really did some investigating. I'm surprised. I thought we were gonna talk about education and technical stuff, but this is cool. So when I was growing up, I had asthma. My parents went to the doctor and they said I should swim. It's very good for asthma. So when I was 7, I started swimming competitively until I was about 18. And since then, I never stopped swimming. And actually, I think, again, the big change happened around 10 years ago, maybe that midlife crisis again, when I decided I can't swim back and forth and look at the bottom of the pool anymore. So I switched to the open sea. And I try to swim as much as I can outdoors. So in the sea, I live in Tel Aviv in Israel. So it's about 4 minute walk from my house to the beach. So it's amazing. So every time and the weather year round is pretty nice. Even in winter, it goes down to maybe 16 Celsius, which is around, I think, 60 Fahrenheit degrees. I just go in where I get used to the water after a few minutes, and it's amazing. You see fish and the jellyfish, and just being by yourself surrounded by the ocean, it's really exciting. I compare it to running on a treadmill versus running outdoors. Mm-hmm. So it's like a totally different thing. It's meditative. I really love it.
I think there's a fear when you've got a child or a teenager that just seem they want to be in a virtual world all the time, and they have those digital creative strengths. But with you, you're an example of someone who does love that virtual world, but also is great with your hands, and you go swimming in the sea, and it's got that balance thing all figured out.
I hope so. Again, I believe sports is something you need to do for as long as you live, right? I heard someone say a few years ago, this guy was like 80, and he said the only job you can't quit is the gym. So I think it's a lifelong thing you have to keep going at.
Yeah, thank you. Well, not only can you swim, but we have noticed you have also dove into the waters of empowerment. Tell us about your work with the Gangli Sister and the Purple and Nine animations and comic books.
Sure. Gangli Sister was really interesting. This was, I think, several years back. I founded a 3D animation company. And the CEO, Rebecca, of Gangli Sister approached me to advise them on how you do 3D and animation and characters, because they wanted to create an animated series to help empower girls in STEM, so science, tech, engineering, and mathematics, which is a real important goal. So we had a few sessions, and then it became clear that I could help a lot more if I joined the team as maybe head of creative and CTO. So I joined the team and helped with just managing the artists and creating the concept art. And I think what was interesting, it was a small team, so money is always tight. So we tried to think how to develop a unique way to create 3D animation at low cost. And again, we're talking about series. So we talk about many minutes of animations, and we're not Pixar, right? So we don't have those budgets. And 3D is a labor intensive process, and usually it costs a lot. So I think I found something that, or some way to make the design look so appealing and strange and weird, because that's what I wanted. I didn't want it to look like a Pixar or Disney. It should have I thought it should look something different and not too cute, but it looked very interesting. And then the content and the design of that would take away from the sort of cheap animation, if you can call it that. So we created a few episodes, and then we also created a non-comic books.
Awesome.
Very interesting. Yeah, yeah. And we're still friends, me and Rebecca, many years later.
So as a storyteller, whether in 3D, VR, sculpture, or animation, we probably are going to assume that you also watch a lot of TV and movies or stay abreast of those. Any favorites?
Yeah, sure. So although I had an animation company at the beginning, I'm not super enthusiastic about all the animation movies. So of course, I love Pixar, but if the story is not good, I don't think anything's going to hold up. So it doesn't matter the effects, and those, I view those as just tools. So first of all, you have to have a good story. And of course, Pixar mm-hmm. knows how to do everything perfect. So Miles Morales, Into the Spider-Verse by Sony, actually, a few years back, was an amazing movie. Just breaking up all the rules about animation, about 3D, using 2D, using a different frame rate to create effects. I was amazed. I was just sitting in the movie theater with my mouth open. That was really amazing. A few movies, if you want me to name out a few that come to mind, are probably Fight Club and Boogie Nights, mm-hmm. and of course Back to the Future and Stand By Me, which I grew up in the US in the 80s. Oh. So of course that always, I just actually just saw Back to the Future this week with my son, who's 12, and Stand By Me.
That's so fun.
So he really liked it. Yeah, so it's like a movie from the 80s, and this, my kid is 12 years old, but he really liked it. So that just shows you how, when the story is good and everything just sits in place, it doesn't matter how long, how much time goes by.
I think there's already something neat we could tie into education here. Brad and I are mostly involved in online courses and do have a tendency to chase the flashy new tool, or Brad works on animated videos as well. And I think it is encouraging to hear that the content is going to trump over the flesh of the tool, or that the animation, the video, the 3D digital asset isn't powerful without some quality content underneath. So still there's that importance of having a faculty member or a subject matter expert really speaking into the underlying story and message and content delivery. Yeah,
you know what they say, content is king. It is. The tools change. We're going to speak maybe a little bit about XR and VR. So those, the new tools are coming in, but the tools will change. We'll have different ways to experience any content, but then the content has to be really good in order to hold up. That's what I think.
We'll get a little more serious now. You spent much of your career looking for gaps in the market and finding ways to deliver on them. With this in mind, what should universities consider when they're faced with implementing new technologies such as 3D and XR?
Okay. So let me maybe talk about this, and I'll elaborate about maybe the differences between 3D, AR, VR, and maybe also 360 videos, which is something that I noticed is slowly also beginning to happen. And I believe will take a larger cut of the market. 3D, first of all, is a major term, which includes 3D objects, which are all the 3D assets and models and textures and surroundings and props that create this parallel world. Every time I talked about 3D and explained it to people who didn't know what it's like, so it's just like in the real world, we create 3D assets, right? And in order to see them, we have to create lights. So we put virtual lights in those virtual scenes. And then we put a camera in there so we can see it. So it's a major term for creating that world. And then, of course, we have 3D tools, which can be post-production tools. So we can use them to create movies or advertisement. But we also have real-time engines like Unity or Unreal, so we can play video games in real time. But then everything around you is 3D. So, and something else that's interesting is that 3D games have been around for over three decades, I think. And again, they were played on desktops, so not on VR. But again, the 3D is here for many years since I started using it, of course. And of course, the quality is getting better as we have new creation tools and better hardware. And then AR and VR are ways to look and interact with those 3D worlds. So VR stands for virtual reality. And what happens in virtual reality, you use a headset like the MetaQuest or HoloLens or the PlayStation VR, and it surrounds you by the virtual world. So you don't see the actual world. So you're enclosed in that world, and that world is 3D. So it's like your eyes are the camera that look at that world, and it's surrounded. AR is another level which actually combines its augmented reality, and it combines and merges and overlays reality with 3D objects or scenes. So it doesn't always have to be just 3D, but mostly it's done with 3D objects. So maybe I'll give you an example. I don't know if you guys used Google Maps walking around, and you have an ability to look around with your camera, and then you see arrows that show you when you want to get someplace, right? Mm-hmm. Those arrows are created in 3D. Those are 3D arrows that are overlaid on top of that real world. So that's an AR example. And it's not with a headset, it's with a mobile phone. So AR, what's unique about it is that you can use mobile phones or tablets, but you can also use a headset. So the Apple Vision Pro, for example, is a VR/AR headset. So you can have it surround you with 3D, but you can also see through and have your computer or see screens that you work on, but they will be placed on top of or overlaid on top of the real world. Another example, I think, is something that, again, I worked a lot with, is creating 3D for commerce. So, for example, I don't know if you guys tried it, you want to buy a new sofa. So you go to this website, you download a model, and then you can see how the sofa looks in your living room. So that's really useful, right? Because you can see the size, you can see if it fits, you can change the colors. So that's a good example of AR commerce, for example. And then if we talk about 360 videos, so I don't think it's common yet, because first of all, you have to have a headset, and those are not so common as I would like to, because you have to be surrounded within them. So two examples that I actually can share and I think are pretty good is that one is Quest has created 360 episodes about food. So they created, I think, around three episodes. These are like around 10 minutes each. And it's not done with 3D. It's done with a 360 actual camera that they placed in different locations around the world. And each episode is about a different food process creation. So they talk to a different chef. You're placed not just looking at a TV, but you're placed inside with the chef while he is explaining and talking about it. So you can look around and you can see the restaurant and you can see the people walking around. Then you see the main course, and it's huge and it's in front of you, and you can almost touch it. Okay. But you're just a passive user. You're not doing anything with the movie. You're just watching a movie, but it's a different format, which I think is great. Another cool example is by Universal Studios. And what they did is they created a scene that it's almost like a ride. So you don't do anything. You just sit around and you look around and dinosaurs, right? So that's also very cool to understand, for example, how big the dinosaur was back then, because you see him raise his head up to the trees and then he comes up to you. So it's really exciting, but it's just like a passive ride. So it's like Universal Studios do. So I think that's also very interesting use cases for 360 videos. It's like a cinema experience.
So everywhere we go, we hear people talking about 3D, AR, VR, XR. And I'm guessing most people don't fully understand what those means. And your descriptions have been very helpful.
Excellent.
What are some... some of the misunderstood aspects of these technologies?
Okay, so this is a great question because I really feel this is misunderstood. So the answer is adding value. And what I mean by that And the short answer is not copying the real world. Okay, so creating experiences that add value that is not possible in the real world. And I think 2 years ago, when metaverse was a hype word and everyone was creating these metaverse worlds, they all pretty much sucked. I don't know if I can use this word, but because 90% of them, and I don't know if you try them, you just walk around empty spaces that looked like 3D did 20 years ago. And there was nothing to do there. It was just, let's create a world and people will come on it and then we'll try to do something. So many companies were approaching me to help them create these worlds. So I remember even back in around 2000, there was VRML. So that was like a 3D streaming language tool. And it was just coming in. And then people were talking about, okay, so in the future, there's going to be, you're going to do your shopping on a virtual store. So you would walk around, you would push the cart on the aisle, you would move to the right. Again, this was not with a headset, but just on your laptop or your computer. But you would pick up whatever you need, you put it in the cart, and then you go to the checkout. And I was thinking, why would I want to do that? If I want to be in a virtual world, I want to fly. I want to be Spider-Man. I want to shoot stuff. I want to have exciting stuff that I can do in real life. And then on the other hand, if I want to do my shopping, grocery shopping, I come home, I just want to get it done, right? I just want this list with check marks and get it shipped immediately. And I think that was stuff that 20 years ago people were talking about. And then 2 years ago, they were starting talking about that again. And it didn't make sense. So adding value is so important, right? I went to this online conventions 2 years ago, virtual online conventions. And then you walk a long time until you get to the stage. And then on the stage, the speakers, but they're very low quality 3D avatars that are barely moving. And after a few minutes, it was really interesting what they said, but it was not interesting to see that. So I just put it on the back and did other stuff while listening to that. So actually, it became like a radio. So instead of moving forward to make more interactive experiences, it became like a radio, which it doesn't make sense, right? So it lowers the value. So I think, again, the fact that you can create something or do something is not enough. And I think this all relates back to what we talked about, story and content, right? You have to add value that doesn't exist in the real world, because why would I wanna copy the real world? It's an amazing world we've got, right? I can go swimming in the open sea. I don't want to do it with an XR. Maybe a few years from now, where I'll wear the haptics and I will feel the water on my body and everything, and it could be a similar experience, but right now it's very far from that. And if I relate that to education, I think education should be the same. So it needs to create new and better interactions and experiences using these tools. So not just copying, but either the value could be making it easier to learn, quicker to understand, getting more stuff done, helping the teachers, right? Grade more, analyze the students more. How do you add more value by these technologies? And again, these are just tools. The tools are not important. What is important is creating the content to add value.
Hey folks, we're going to pause here, but we'll be back next week with Ofer Rubin on the Digital to Learn podcast. We'll see you then.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Embrace the future.
Always keep learning.